Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to episode 4 of the Today's Knuckleball Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I am your host, Timothy King, and I am joined by Greg Jewett. Greg, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you doing, Tim?
Good, good. You can follow Greg at GJewett9, and you can follow me at TKing978. You can follow the site at MyKnuckleballs. We've got a lot to talk about tonight. Tons of stuff going on. Tons of bullpen stuff, injuries. The whole deal. So we're just going to get right into it. Pretty nice to see, I don't know if you saw, but Juan Carlos Stanton just hit a opposite field home run about 15 minutes ago. Greg, did you see that?
Yeah, I did. I'm flipping between a couple of the games right now. Right, actually, I'm watching Toronto and Tampa Bay with the volume on mute, but I'm hoping one of the dogs doesn't bark.
Yeah, and Jose Reyes left the game with a what might be an oblique injury, and I guess he's been dealing with that for a bit, so that's going to be something to monitor. Nothing new with Jose Reyes, though. He's a staunch member of the DL club. So let's hit some bullpens first here, and I'll let you just kind of dive right into it. How long is Fernando Rodney's leash?
I think Seattle's proven they'll stay with him. He had a couple of rough patches last year. What concerns me is, and he was in the article today, focuses on our relievers at the site, but he's had back-to-back seasons of 1.34 whips. This year, he's not fooling anybody. His contact percentage is 93.3%. I mean, it's gone up a little bit from 69 in 2013 to 75 last year. I mean, they're swinging and hitting everything he's pitching. His swinging strike rate is only 4.5%. So his velocities are the same and the pitches are the same. So either he's leaving them over the plate or batters are just more prepared for what he's doing. So I think he's got a little bit of rope based upon the amount of saves that he piled up last year. But I've already heard people saying that they're going to add Danny Farquhar. But last year, Yervis Medina logged more eighth inning. He logged more innings in the eighth than Farquhar did. And Farquhar's had a couple of rough spots early in the season himself. So I would be more inclined to take a cheap stash on Yervis Medina and with Carson Smith as the stealth guy. I'm not adding Farquhar. He could get the opportunities if they did something with Rodney, but I think Medina and Smith could be ahead of him in that.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I kind of saw the same thing. A lot of people were saying Farquhar, but I don't know, I think it might be Medina, too. I mean, I think you're right. I looked back last year at his usage, and he was used in a lot more of those spots.
At the end of the season last year, it was Medina the whole final couple months there. He had a really, really good August. He averaged 13K per nine in August, so.
Yeah, and he's pitching pretty well against this year. He's got a 5-1 strikeout to walk rate and 5 2/3, so he might be the guy there, but I think you're right. Lloyd McClendon already came out and said that, you know, if you kind of waffle back and forth between guys, it creates he used something to the term of, I don't know, something like it creates a messy situation. So I think Rodney has got plenty of leash there. He's, managers are old school when it comes to looking at that kind of stuff anyway. And Rodney has definitely, locked it down there for the last couple of years, led the league in saves last year. So I think Rodney has a pretty long leash as far as struggling closers are concerned.
I guess the key with Rodney, I'm sorry, is just watching that, see if his swinging strike rate can recover and the contact percentage. I mean, that both of those have to even out a little bit, and then he can kind of settle in. But I think Rodney is who he is at this point.
Yeah, I think he is. He is who he is. He's been that way for a while, and I mean, eventually, we all knew it was gonna kind of come back to catch up to him. But the velocity isn't down, which is a good sign. So, maybe it's just you know, as opposed to an injury or something, maybe he's just working out some early season mechanics and stuff, and maybe he can get that right. But I would definitely be prepared to absorb some not so comfortable ninth innings if I was a Rodney owner. So moving on to a bullpen that I think is a little less certain as far as leash goes, and we have a manager who is out, Clint Hurdle, looking at Mark Melanson's velocity, making it kind of a known thing. So that definitely sets off a red flag as far as I'm concerned. When a manager comes out and, you know, publicly, you know, kind of calls his closer out and says, you know, listen, his velocity's down, so it's something I'm going to watch. So what are your thoughts on Mark Melanson? Does it seem like there might be an injury going on here? And do you think his leash is longer than or shorter than Rodney's? And if you think his job is in some trouble, is there a target for a wait and stash in that Pirates bullpen?
You touched upon a couple of them. So I think Melanson has just as long of a leash as Rodney. I mean, he really took that role and ran with it last year, and that's why they were willing to trade Jason Grilly to just kind of state to him that, hey, this is your job. So, yes, across the board, his velocities are down 3 miles per hour on all of his pitches, so that is something to monitor. Although last night he bounced back a little bit. He went through the meat of the Tigers' order. He walked Miguel Cabrera, but if I was throwing a little less velocity, I'd probably walk Miguel Cabrera too. And then he did get J.T. Martinez out, and then he got Cespedes to ground into a double play. And that's more of a thing. He's not a high K guy to begin with. I mean, last year his average fastball was a tick under 90 miles per hour. So, I mean, he doesn't go in there and blow people away, but he spots his pitches well. He generates ground balls, and he's been effective. So I'm willing to be a little patient with him, but if his velocities aren't coming up, we'll have to see what happens. So I don't know why, as far as stashes, I would say take a look at Jared Hughes, who's been generating a lot of strikeouts, and then Archimedes Caminero, who was just highlighted the other day on Fangraphs as well. He throws 99 miles per hour and is someone to keep an eye on.
Yeah, and I think I'm kind of with you there. Melanson's been really, really good, even if he hasn't been in a closer role over the past couple of years. So, you know, I'm kind of with you there. He's a wait-and-see approach. So, all right, so Jim Johnson got a save last night for Atlanta. Are you concerned with Jason Grilly's job security, or is that a one-time thing with Grilly getting the night off?
I hope it's just a one-time thing, but Johnson has actually been pitching well. And for somebody that really did generate strikeouts when he was struggling, his K's are up this year, so it's something to watch.
I think we have an echo here. Are you hearing it?
I didn't hear it until the last segment. When I first started, no, but just there I did. I'm hunting to see if I can find a different pair of headphones to switch into, so why don't you talk for a minute and I'll look around.
Okay, yeah, it's probably Blog Talk, but we'll continue. So really probably a net off. Jim Johnson, I don't think, is in any real, a real contender for the job. So we're going to be looking at, you know, Nathan is probably going to have a shot to get his job back, when he's available.
Tim's going to try and patch up a little technical difficulties here with Blog Talk, so hopefully you can still hear me. One of the next things we're going to talk about was Joe Nathan in Detroit. Tim wanted me to speak about possibly his return. Brad Osmus has been usually pretty staunch in his feelings towards keeping Joe Nathan as the closer, but with the recent strong performance of Joaquin Soria and his force and his pitching four times in 5 days, I think speaks to something that, one, Nathan couldn't do, and two, something that the Tigers haven't been used to in the bullpen. So I think it's something that will be monitored, especially if Nathan has any form of setbacks. Although the other day he threw his side session well, unlike Verlander, who shut it down an inning too soon. Another topic that Tim wanted me to touch upon, that we were both going to speak about, was Yasmani Tomas, who was who was supposed to start in the minors, but Arizona surprisingly called back up last night. Though he did not, he did get a pinch hit appearance against Brandon Morrow, but he was fed a steady diet of sliders. And then tonight, again, is not in the starting lineup. So, Tim, I was just speaking a moment. I already covered Joe Nathan, and I think he will get a look as long as he's healthy. But I was encouraged by the Twitterverse last night where the beat writer was saying that now that Sarias had the role a little bit, that it would be something that Osmus would have to visit. So that means as much as he's done the stand-by-your-man bit on our man Joe Nathan, I think Soria has shown him in the last week that what he can do in that role. So all of a sudden, Osmus is going, maybe this isn't so bad.
Yeah, no, I think what's going to happen is Brad Osmus is going to see, while Joe Nathan's out, it's going to be like, wow, it's nice to have a closer that comes in and just gets the job done, and we walk out of here with, without having a coronary. So,
and not only that, going back to back to back. I mean, he pitched four times in the last 5 days.
Yeah, and there's no way
Nathan could do that.
No, and I mean, if Nathan picks three games in a row, you're looking at at least one bonus hit. But I think it's probable that at some point Nathan is going to get another shot. But look, Nathan's got to come back from the injury first. You know, when he ramps up throwing again, he could have a setback. He's an old man, so I'm not too concerned. If I'm a Soria owner, I'm not necessarily going out and stashing Joe Nathan at this point, because I'd like to see Nathan actually, ramp up his work and kind of get back to the routine a little bit before kind of deciding that I need to add Nathan as security. But I think Nathan does probably get one shot when he comes back. But, if Nathan just, just continues to pitch lights out, it's going to be tough. So, Nathan is probably a kind of a fringe, just kind of wait and see for a while, but I'm happy right now if I'm a story owner.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I did touch for a moment upon Yasmani Tomas. We have had this conversation. I don't know if it was on air or off, but I said before any of this was happening, even when he was getting drafted as high as the 10th round in the preseason, that I saw him as more of a Dane Vecchietto type who was still an unsigned free agent. So I'm sure he has a little bit more pop and he could have some upside, but even right now, I don't know if I'd be adding him, especially since they called him up and only used him in a pinch hitting role.
Yeah, I don't think there's really a spot for him to play every day. I think is Arizona's, their management is just really, really pretty bad. It's like, I was listening to Eric Carabel on the ESPN Fantasy Baseball podcast this morning, and he was talking about, he was comparing the Arizona Diamondbacks organization to that one guy in your dynasty league who doesn't have, a chance to win in the future, but he also doesn't have a chance to win now because his roster is just so poor. And I think that's kind of right. Like, they really don't have a catcher, and someone was saying on Twitter that the reason why they called Tomas up was so that way he could pinch hit late in the game for, the catcher against, a certain-handed pitcher. And it doesn't make any sense, considering that a week ago the reason why they sent him down was because he needed to work on his conditioning and he wasn't ready for the bigs, yet now a week later he's ready. It doesn't make much sense.
Yeah, and he needs the bat. He needs to see the sliders and the off-speed stuff that he's going to see at next level so he can be successful. There's having him sit on the bench and watch the other guys play makes no sense. Curious to see what happens with a couple of these injuries, especially if there's anything going on in the middle infields. And that could be a chance for them to move Aaron Hill, get Jake Lamb some more playing time, and they really need to free up a little room in that outfield. I was actually looking at possibly adding Ender Inciarte this weekend, but with all of this circumspect out there, it makes it a little more difficult. But it also might lower his price tag.
Yeah, and I think, you know, like you said, no point. It makes no sense for him to come up and sit on the bench. Got to see pitching. And he was only hitting, you know, he was only hitting like 190. He didn't have a home run, but, you know, he was hitting poor in the minor leagues as well. So
before the night, I watched that game and his at bat because I had the MLB package at home, and the announcers from San Diego were like, well, I assume they just called the AAA team for the scout report on Tomas, where he went 0-for-8 the other day against them, and they fed him a steady diet. I mean, he saw nothing but sliders and had a bat, and it was just like, it wasn't a very competitive one, so that did make me chuckle. I was like, man, the kid needs time. Let him down there and let him play.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We agree there. I don't think there's much mixed league value right now. I mean, unless it's like a super deep league, maybe like a 15-team league. Do you think he's addable in a 12-team mix?
12-team mix? No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I agree. So let's move on to America's favorite defense, Greg, and that's the Washington Nationals, and more specifically, Ian Desmond. What does he have, 6 errors in 8 games? He's like, he's on 150-error season projection here. He's hitting low in the order, just hit his first home run the other day against the Red Sox. Maybe it was yesterday. What do you think about his batting order spot because of his defense? Do you think he kind of moves his way back up into the top of the lineup there? And do you think he has gone off to a bit of a slow start? What are his final season numbers?
I still think he's a 2020 guy. The Zips updated, which is a fun stat thing to look at. They still have him projected to go 22 home runs, 22 steals. Obviously, they've adjusted his batting average down a little bit, but he's had some bad luck, too. I mean, his BABIP in 2013 was 336. His BABIP last year was 326. Right now, it's at 231. And it makes no sense to me if he's struggling on the field to punish him with his at-bats. I mean, let him get confident at the plate, and then hopefully that'll translate to the field. If you compound things by punishing him for making errors, it's like negative conditioning. I don't understand some of the stuff Matt Williams does with that lineup. I mean, the way he jerked Bryce Harper around last year was criminal. Let the guys get settled in, get them in a set lineup, and let them do what they're good at. I mean, using him down low in the lineup squanders the one ability he has, and has to hit and get on base and run.
Yeah, and I don't get it either. An offense that's missing Anthony Rendon. Got Ian Desmond hitting 6. And he hit they have a 30-year-old rookie, and I can't remember his name for the life of me, but he hit behind him the other night. I don't like his defense. I don't remember what his name is. Yeah, that's right, Rob, yeah. And it's mind-boggling that he is letting his defense dictate where he hits in the lineup. They need Desmond. Without Desmond, you know, that offense is not that great. But I think, you know, Desmond will be fine to a degree. I've never really been a huge fan of him because he just doesn't take a walk. He's kind of like the Adam Jones of shortstops. But every year, he's the only player in the big leagues for the last 4 straight years to go 2020. So, I like that, and not much else. I mean, he's the batting average is not going to be great, and his walk rate's not going to be anything to write home about either. But do you think Desmond's a top 3 shortstop?
I think he can still end up there, but it'd be nice to see him move. If he stays down in the order, that kind of mitigates that. It makes it difficult. I mean, it's hard to get the runs and the RBIs when you're down there cleaning up the bottom. So hopefully he'll get moved back up. I mean, how can you have Escobar and other people ahead of him? I just don't get it.
Who would you rather have the rest of the season, Ian Desmond or Jose Reyes?
Desmond, because he's as bad as he is defensively, he's more reliable to stay on the field.
Yeah, and Reyes is hurt, so great. Nelson Cruz, Greg. I mean, what is this? I mean, they're going to be testing him, right? I mean,
I would
Come
think
on.
So, especially after the last 5 games. Yeah, he's going to be being in a cup very soon.
Yeah.
Did you see the tweet? Did you see the tweet by David Price? When, like, every time I hit 98 on the gun, they test me.
Yeah, I did. That was funny. Every time I hit 98 on the gun, they test me. That was funny. But so, what do you think about Nelson Cruz? I mean, we've probably got to adjust some rankings here and kind of adjust what we expect out of him, right? I mean, I had him down to
not hit 30 home runs this year, and you know, and many others in the industry did as well. But I think, you know, given the hot start, he's probably going to hit 30. What say you?
Yeah, it appears that way. Zips already adjusted his rest of the season. They updated. They got him up to 36 now, and they had him in about the 27 to 28 range, like most of us did. I mean, we saw a little bit of, we figured there'd be some depression of his power. He's hitting shots, and when he gets them, they go. And when he gets in these hot streaks, you just ride him as long as you can. You know there's going to be a little bit of regression after it's over, but you just go with it, you know. He's fun to watch when he gets dialed in.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, geez, six homers already. I mean, like you wrote about this winter, though. I mean, he's the ultimate protection for Robinson Cano, and you know the contract that they gave him is probably going to look bad. How many years did they give him? What did they give him? 4 years.
Yeah, it was 4 years. Yeah, they gave him a big amount of money, but Cano wasn't getting pitched to last year, so. I'm thinking Cano's going to be the next one to go on one of these white hot streaks.
Yeah, they gave Nelson Cruz 4 years for $58 million. I mean, it's probably going to – I mean, who knows? Maybe it doesn't look that bad even at age 36 or something. If he brings them this kind of production for the first couple of years of the contract, they'll forget that year four likely decline. So looks like Nelson Cruz just starting off right where he left off last year and – yeah, he's probably a safe bet to go for 30 now. All right, so let's play a little game here. How worried are you about the following guys? So let's start with John Lester. How worried are you about him?
I'm not too worried about him. I looked at his stuff too. His velocities are all in line. I think he's trying too hard at a new spot to justify his contract. He took a lot of flack in the off season. You know, with all the pressure of coming to Chicago, they put him on national TV on a Sunday night and kind of rushed that game to even happen. You follow Lester a little more closely than me, but he didn't get a full spring, did he?
He did not because he had dead arm period.
Yeah, he's 2 weeks behind, so I think he's a nice little buy low. You know, I hate using those buy low, sell high terms, but in this case, it is applicable because there could be desperate owners going, man, I spent an early pick on this guy, and he's terrible, and they press the panic button, and that's a nice time to swoop in.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there. I think it's just going to depend on how low I'm buying. I thought last year was obviously it was an aberration. You know, he had a sub 250 ERA, and he kind of bounced back from what looked like a couple years of decline there. So, obviously, we're not going to see 2014 John Lester. His strikeout rate bounced back up last year after 5 years of decline. So, you know, the National League is definitely going to mitigate some of that decline. But I think you're right. It's probably a nice little buy low, and his velocity is right there and stuff. And he did miss two spring starts with that dead arm. You know, and he's got the new home, and he's probably still kind of adjusting there. So. I would not look at John Lester the same way this year, or even, you know, as some drafters probably looked at him as I did last year towards the end of the year when he was just completely dominant for Boston there, but, you know, and Oakland as well. So, yeah, probably a nice little buy low. In that same breath, Steven Strasburg, any concern there?
Same thing. I tried to look at some of his underlying numbers, and again, his velocities are the same as Lester. They're all straight in line. What I did notice, though, is Strasburg's given up 10% more fly balls this year, which is, I think, what is hurting him. So I think his fastball sometimes gets a little straight, and if he's given up fly balls instead of ground balls, that's how they're getting a little bit over the wall. And I mean, it's not easy for anybody to pitch to that Red Sox lineup right now, and that's something to keep in mind when you're setting your weekly lineups. If you're seeing one of your pitchers is going up against the Red Sox and he's a marginal pitcher, it might be a time to sit him and put in a reliever for the week and just keep your ratios intact. This is a team that at any time can just drop 8 or 9 on you. So I'm not super, super concerned, but I'd like to see him turn it around going into the end of the month here. It's early in April. People got time to turn things around. Going into the next guy that you wanted to talk about, I'm more worried about Samardzija because he's been giving up much more line drives and fly balls, and his ground ball rate is down 16%. So There's something going on there with Samardzija. His slider and his split finger mile per hour are down, but his fastball is still the same. So I don't know if he's maybe just gripping those pitches too long or overthrowing them, but Samardzija of the three is the one I would be the most tepid about doing anything in a trade for.
Yeah, I think you're right there. And I'm actually, what do you think? Do you think Strasburg is finishes the season in Washington, Greg?
It depends on what they're doing. I mean, they're supposed to be the odds-on favorite to win the World Series, and they're scuffling. But there's plenty of time to turn things around. But I have serious concerns about that bullpen and these pitchers. I mean, it doesn't matter if you got a guy that throws great for six or seven innings. They can't throw nine every night. And that bullpen is a disaster. And now they lost Craig Stammen today. So he's out for the year. So I don't know how they haven't called up Rafael Soriano yet, but it wouldn't surprise me if he was on their team by the end of next week, or at least on the assignment and signed to start getting in there. They need bullpen arms, and they need them fast.
Yeah.
They need their boy Rendon back. So I haven't seen any news on him as far as doing any rehab assignments or anything. So, you know, I knew he was really good for him last year, and I love him in my keeper league, but, man, he's got to be looking like an MVP candidate right now, looking at what the Nationals are without him.
Yeah, yeah. Last update I saw on Rendon is that he was hitting, you know, he was kind of throwing and kind of hitting, and then he was still giving him a little bit of a pull that he was doing lateral movement. I mean, it doesn't seem like he is imminently close to a return. And Strasburg, I think, you know, if they don't play defense and they don't hit, it's not going to matter how good these guys are. And I think Max Scherzer just has to be like, are you shitting me? I mean, you know, he's been used to some bad defense in Detroit, and he, you know, coming to Washington, look what he has to deal with now. But I think there's a possibility that, you know, depending on how the stars align, they've got Tanner Roark there in case, you know, something happens. And, you know, I think there's a possibility that Strauss, you know, at the end of the year could find his way out of town. I mean, it doesn't look like they're going to re-sign him considering the money they just gave him that Scherzer. So on the Samardzija front, yeah, I think you're right as well. I did see something about, you know, his mechanics were off. So maybe there's something to that. You know, he's going to be working on that in a side session, kind of trying to iron that out. So Samardzija of the three is the one I'm watching to kind of, you know, kind of see what's going on here, because it is a touch concerning considering the ballpark move and you know, the new lineups and such. So
want ground balls when you're pitching in Chicago.
Yeah, yeah, you don't want the ball hitting the air. But I would rank them, and I would rank them Strasburg, Lester, Samardzija for the rest of the year. Do you agree?
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Okay. Trevor Bauer, Greg. So, you know, punching guys out. He's got 19 whiffs in 12 innings. The only concern there is the walks, and I think that's obvious. That's what we've seen out of Bauer in the past. So I'm going to ask you: is Bauer legit? And if he is, to what degree do you think? Do you think this is something that could keep up the rest of the year?
Column on him and three other pitchers on Tuesday. If people want to pull it up from the site, but that was the squad going up column. But with Trevor Bauer, less is more. If I listed out in that sheet all of the pitches that he's thrown the last 2 years. Last year, I believe he threw, or off the top of my head, I put that article away, but I think he threw 8 or 9 pitches last year, different pitches in ball games at certain points all through the year. I mean, that's a lot of pitches. The nice thing is that yesterday in his start, he threw 61 fastballs, 14 changeups, 22 sliders, 4 curves, and he always throws in 1 screwball. I don't know how that always gets in on there, but his first 2 starts, there's been 1 screwball in each one of them. And Bauer is a little bit of a screwball. He's funny. He got in trouble for flying the helicopter, the drone at spring training. MLB yelled at him because it probably gave other people bad ideas about how to scout teams. But
they banned drones. Did you hear that, Greg?
What's that?
Yeah,
it was
actually
Bauer.
Banned.
It's hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's probably for security reasons too, as much as I laugh about that, but you know, that's a whole separate thing with national security. But he's always had a great arm, and it's just a matter of getting him to commit to like 3 to 4 pitches that he really believes in, and simplifying his approach. And then if he wants to add in something, I mean, all winter he worked with different pitching coaches. He went to different places. And, I mean, he overthinks a lot, and I included the link to the article about that. He almost thinks too much. He needs to just look at the finger and throw the pitch and hit the location, because if he does that, great year. If he just has to cut down those walks, and he's a definite breakout person. You know, everybody was saying, oh, who's the next Kluber going to be? Who's the next Kluber going to be? Maybe it's power. Maybe he just shuts things down. Now, the only thing I will say, there's a couple of people have noticed when they've watched him pitch that he shakes his arm near the end of the game. So something to keep in the back of your head, but I've always been a believer in Bauer's talent.
Yeah, I don't think there's any denying that. 24 years old, you know, everything's there for him. He's just got to cut down those walks. And, you know, even if he cuts down the walks, not even to a huge degree, if he can just, you know, if he can just make some headway into that. We're looking at, you know, a potential number two fantasy starter here, I think. Mm-hmm. But through two starts, it's been great, even though he has faced the Astros, to be fair. But, you know,
yeah, I got him in the reserve round in my 13-team keeper league. I mean, people didn't believe him, so I got him for, like, next to nothing in that.
Yeah, I actually did the same thing in a 12-team keeper, and I think Bauer is the ultimate post-hat guy this year. So I was happy to get him really late. You know, he's kind of just been forgotten about, and he's come out of the gate and made some people rethink it here a little bit. So it's all just going to depend on the walks. Everything's there, so keep an eye on that. The walks come down even a little bit. Even if he can get that down to, like, I don't know, 3.5, or even approaching 4 walks per 9, like the strikeout rate, he's going to make some big gains. And I do think he'll be a little better this year than he was last year. So definitely something to keep an eye on. And I don't know his ownership totals, but he should be added in pretty much all mixed leagues at this point.
They've jumped up on ESPN. I think today I saw him break the 90 percentage mark. Whereas on Tuesday I did the article, he was in the 40s, I believe. So, yeah, people are taking notice on the strikeouts.
Yeah, he pitched well against Chicago. He struck out 8. All right, so Dustin Pedroia. It's a great story for me, Greg. I don't know about you, but I'm gonna be at Fenway tomorrow night. I'm excited. My first game of the year. Pedroia's got 3 homers. We're a week and a half into the season, and he had a big game the other night. What do you think about Pedroia? Are you ready to change your mind? Because I know I think you and I were both kind of iffy on him. You know, I wouldn't bet against Pedroia for any reason, but you know, there's definitely been a little bit of a decline in skill there. But finally healthy, do you think he can finish in the top 5 at second base?
I think he can, just based on what I said before about, you know, he's been batting second in that lineup, and it's just been scoring runs. So, I mean, you know, good lineup, good batting spot. That just means more RBIs, it means more runs, and he's always had a good batting average. So if his power and his wrist and the thumb and everything else that has happened is healthy, I mean, he's as a Yankee fan, he was always the one guy in the Red Sox that I always really, really enjoyed watching, because he was gritty, he played hard, and he's someone that I've always respected through the years. So I have no problem with Pedroia being a top 5 player this year. There's been other second basemen that are struggling out of the gate, and I think it's a position in transition, but he's a veteran that stepped up and answered the bell so far. I'm curious to see if he can hold the power gains. I mean, he has had some power seasons in the past, and this could be the first time he's been healthy in the last 3 years. So a lot of us may have been sleeping when we were passing him by and taking the upside guys late at second base. Pedroia could be proving us wrong, and I know you and I have been echoing the sentiment all year, because we thought this was going to be the year of the bounce back veterans, and Pedroia has been one of the ones that really has stepped up thus far.
Yeah, and you mentioned that you mentioned the respect factor as a Yankee fan, and Mario Rivera, I know you probably know about this, but a couple of years ago said if he had to pick, I think he said if he had to pick any player to build his team around in baseball, is that what it was? It would be Dustin Pedroia. Was that what it was? Did you hear about that?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, so that's telling right there. But, you know, Pedroia hasn't hit more than 9 homers since 2012, but the health factor is there. 2012 was the last really healthy season. Hit 290 with 15 homers and 20 steals. Takes walks. You know, he's hitting in front of, I mean, he's hitting behind Mookie Betts in front of David Ortiz and Yandy Ramirez. I mean, what else do you want? Even if the power doesn't really come back and he only hits, say, 10 home runs, he's going to approach 100 runs. And, you know, he's going to do quite a few things, even if the gains aren't truly back. Would you rather have Pedroia or Jason Kipnis for the rest of the year?
That's a tough one. I'll still say Kipnis because I think he's about to hit his stride, but that's a very close one. Safe, the safe floor is Pedroia. I think Kipnis, if he can start running the bases and hit with a little thump, he's more of an upside play. So I won't back down. I'll stay with Kipnis for now, but we'll see in another month where I'm sitting on that one.
Fair, and it's a lot closer than it was a month ago, too. So,
oh, yeah.
Interesting. So, Greg, we were a year early on our San Diego Padres projection, but, hey, they're really, really pitching well. And, you know, even without Ian Kennedy, who we'll touch upon in a little bit, they've got a nice little club. So, a guy that I've always liked, and I've been sucked in so many times, is Brandon Morrow. And he is in the optimum spot. It seems like I love how San Diego collects all these guys that I love, Josh Johnson, Brandon Morrow, Ian Kennedy, all these guys from just in the wrong situations. And, you know, it's just so much hope for them when they get to Petco. It's like Petco is the heaven for, like, you know, bargain bin pitchers. But what do you think about Brandon Morrow? Are we adding him in 12-team mixed leagues at this point?
I think so. What's really nice is that he has a 2.4 ground ball to fly ball ratio, and even when the ball is in the air, half of his games are in Petco. And what's even scarier is right now he's in his first two starts, he has a 31.4 line drive percentage against, and that's going to normalize and go down, so he could even be better going forward. And he has a 1.29 ERA and a 2.79 xFIP. So before we joined forces at Today's Knuckleball, I did an article comparing him to Chris Carpenter when he got out of Toronto and went to St. Louis. And
I remember that.
So far, it's been going right to the script. And he's doing just like Carpenter, more ground balls now. He's not worried about striking out people in every at-bat. And he looks good. Like that was part of the reason I wanted to watch that game last night, was to see if he was for real. He gave up the 2-run home run in the first to Paul Goldschmidt, but after that he settled right down, and that's all that Arizona got. So far, Joaquin Benoit has taken both of his wins because the game's been tied when he's left. But he's been the ultimate vulture this year. But, you know, it's all about health with Morrow. I mean, he's in a great situation. I say you add him and you ride him for as long as he can hold on.
Yeah, I think that's it. I mean, we've seen flashes, and then he just, 2011 is the prime example there. Threw 179 innings, had a really nice K rate, above 10. The ERA was a bit high, and then he actually in 2012 was his breakout sub-3 ERA through 125 innings. But yeah, I think you're right with the line drive rate. That is going to come down a lot. However, he does have a 95% strand rate, which will
mitigate
that.
I mean, there's going to be give and take on that. I don't think he's going to get the ERA under 2 by any means. But I think his 3.05 FIP is a nice place to look, even though his ERA could get a little above that point. But, you know what you're going into, but also at a time when, you know, pitching, this is why you can get cheap pitchers. So I was fortunate enough to get him, and that's one of the guys, my picks, that's saving me right now in that 15-team league, because I took a late-round flyer on Morrow, so that has paid off.
Yeah, and actually in all of my more serious leagues, he was actually drafted. So here I am running to the waiver wire a couple of days ago to see if Morrow's out there, and he wasn't there in any of them. I was really bummed out. But Morrow stays healthy, I'd be happy with an ERA under 4, some strikeouts, a bunch of ground balls. He is a nice add, and, you know, see what happens, see where the ride goes. Some injury news, pretty shitty news for me in particular. Carlos Gomez has been placed on the 15-day DL with what looks like a hamstring tear of some kind. Still waiting more news on that, but obviously a huge, massive blow to the Brewers, to me, to fantasy owners as well. So, you know, as more news becomes available, we'll definitely let you know about that. Some Carlos Gomez replacements, Greg.
Well, it's going to be akin to all the guys that I looked at in the Rios article, so... You're looking for guys that are trying to hit at the top of the order, like a Kevin Kiermaier type. If by some way, shape, or form, Steven Souza is available, and he's really not heavily owned in the ESPN league. I believe his ownership's only like 16%. I would say run, don't walk to go sign him. So those are a couple of nice places to start. And again, I would almost say if you just pull up onto today's knuckleball and hit the replacing Rios and just go through that same batch of outfielders, those are all similar targets. You're looking for people, Alejandro Peaza. At least he can give you a little bit of home run, a little bit of steals. If you need some power, you're looking at a Travis Snyder type. You know, just get guys on teams that are hitting in good spots, and just hopefully you can get a good month out of them while Gomez works his way back. The way he runs, I can't see it being less than 4 weeks.
No, I was actually just going to say the same thing after you stopped talking. He plays the game probably harder than anybody, and I actually saw the footage. Probably a month, I think, is something I would agree with there. And go check out Greg's article on the site at myknuckleballs.com. It's really out for Rios injury, but it also pertains to Gomez as well. He's got some good replacements out there who are quite widely available. I would go check that out if you have Gomez. Greg, Danny Salazar is getting called up. He's going to start this weekend in replace of the injured Carlos Carrasco, who will get pushed back to Monday. Do you think there's a chance Salazar is up for good? I'm not so sure.
I don't know. Zach McAllister to me is much better in the bullpen than as a starter, and I think that's been shown in his first couple of starts. Last year in the bullpen, he was lights out at the end of the year, and the Indians need some stabilization in that bullpen. You want to really rely on Scott Atchison going for the rest of the year and Brian Shaw in the seventh and eighth inning. I think McAllister could have a Contez light role going forward in that bullpen and really stabilize him. So, and T.J. House didn't do anything to endear himself to the Indians either in his debut. So, facing a right-handed lineup like the Tigers isn't easy on House, but I think Salazar has a chance to pitch his way into the rotation. It'll be interesting. The beat writer from the Indians is on the same page you are. He doesn't know how long he'll be there, but I think he can pitch his way in or he can pitch his way out. So it's kind of up to him if he wants to stay at the show. But his strikeout upside is what draws us all in. His K per nine is off the charts.
It's been the same story for 2 years now with Salazar, and he did come up and show some shutter, I think, last year when he came up. And he had a good stretch of, like, 3 games, and it kind of gave us hope, and then he fell apart again. So I'm not so sure he's up for good, but, if he comes up and throws a gem, probably gives him another start. But I don't know what to make of that. Man, if Danny Salazar can come up and pitch like he can, that Indians rotation can be gruesome, I think.
Imagine the strikeouts that team could amass if everybody stays healthy.
My God. How about a series of the Indians versus the Astros?
Well, with Kluber, Salazar, and Bauer throwing, you can be looking at piles and piles of strikeouts.
Yeah. We're looking at 10 a game, easy. Pending returns, we'll dive through these real quick, Greg. We've got some pitchers on the mend. Garrett Richards is on his way back. Any concern with a knee, or you think he's ready to go?
I'm 50-50 on that because they did say he covered first on one of the plays during the game, and he came up just a bit gimpy. So I don't know if he's wearing a knee brace or any of that, but if he plays a team like Oakland, I could see them being a team that would bunt a lot and make him move around and see what he can do. I mean, he can't be any worse. Did you see the other thing the other night when CC didn't even cover first base on a ground ball?
I did.
Oh, my God. I was like, what do they got to do, put a cheeseburger on first base to get his fat ass over there? It's like, come on. If you can't cover a base, you shouldn't be pitching. I'm sorry. I'm just so fed up. I don't even want to watch that team. I'm so happy I have the MLB package because I can just watch anybody but them right now because they just frustrate me to that level.
Yeah, now you're not stuck watching Yankee games every night. You know what they should do? They should install one of those airport things from the mound to first base from CC pitcher, so that way if there's a ball, you can just hop on it and cruise over.
Yeah, shuttle him over.
Yeah. CC's a mess at Yankee Stadium. Sorry for you, but I don't know. Grant Richards, so, yeah, I did see that about the knee. I saw the same tweet, the same series of tweets you did that he maybe came up a little light on that, so that's going to be something to monitor. But if you've got Garrett Richards, you're activating him right away and throwing him back into the fire. And, if Richards is right, I think he's a top 20 starter, so time will tell.
Yeah, the nice thing is that it was a leg injury. It had nothing to do with his shoulder or elbow or anything of that nature.
Right.
So, he's still going to be throwing hard. It's just a matter of keeping that knee stable.
Right, and, hopefully the knee is fully healed, and hopefully he didn't kind of, having kind of a little setback there because, you know, that could affect his velocity in the coming days. But hopefully the knee's all set, and if you own him, like I said, he's starting. Drew Smyly will return tentatively for April 29th for the Rays. He was completely dominant after the trade from the Tigers to Tampa last year. So another guy, if I own him, I am activating him right away and using him. And if he's available in any leagues, he's got to be added. You agree?
Yeah. I mean, you know, the way he finished the year with them and his pitch arsenal, trusting the pitches a little more in Tampa Bay, they seem to take the kid gloves off him a little more than Detroit did. So he knew his role. Detroit kind of shuttled him between the bullpen and into the rotation. So I think that's a nice spot for him. So it'll be good to see. And they need him after having the Erasmo Ramirez on the mound last night.
That was a failed experiment after one start. Homer Bailey will return on Saturday, the $100-something million man, if I do remember correctly. Arm injuries last year, you know, kind of a wait-and-see approach with him. He may not be a guy I would activate right away. I'm not so sure how he's pitching in the minor league, even though I haven't had a look. But he will be back on Saturday, so obviously the next week he needs to be owned, but probably a wait-and-see approach there.
Yes, I think you need to see one or two starts before you flip them in there.
Sure, but a solid middle of the rotation fantasy starter if he's right, definitely. And Ian Kennedy, we did touch upon him. He will probably miss the minimum, so he's getting ready to start ramping up activity again soon. And you know, that's good news for the Padres. Good news for us.
Yep, I own him in a couple, so yeah, come on back, Ian.
I do too, and glad he's going to be making a swift return here. So once he's back, get him right back in the lineup too. He will get some good strikeout numbers and all of that. So I have a new love affair, Greg, and you know who it is, Steven Souza. Another stolen base tonight. You know, he's a couple homers. I don't know if you saw that mammoth shot he hit in Toronto the other night, a 407-foot third deck homer that he did give a quick glance to and kind of watch that thing go out as he hit it. But he likes to run. He has some good power. What do you think about Souza? Do you think he has a top 30 upside here? Or am I a little too excited?
I think that's too high, but, you know, he's had a better start than my boy Springer. So right now Souza is leading him in that race. But it's been a matter of playing time for him. He's kind of buried in the national system. And how much could the Nationals use a little offensive boost like having him around instead of Clint Robinson? But be that as it may, he's in Tampa Bay. So the Zips updated has him up to 17 home runs projected and 18 stolen bases. I still think he can get more than 18 bags, and I think he can get more. I think he could realistically be on his way to a 2020 season. Just know that it could be at the cost of, just like my man Crush Springer, it might be a 245 average, but at a time where the league average is 252, that's palatable. I don't have a problem with him on my team. I'm shocked at how low his ownership is on ESPN. He'll probably weekend if he stays hot, but he's grossly under-owned on that site.
Yeah, and I mean, if the people who are playing in ESPN League follow me, I get daily updates about what Steven Souza's been doing. So if anybody on ESPN is following me, the updates, ownership should go up. But 96 games in Nationals AAA system last year, 18 homers, 26 steals, and a .350 batting average. The strikeout rate is just ridiculous right now. He's whiffing at it's been 9 games, but he's whiffing at a 38% clip. So that's going to have to change, or, you know, 245 is going to be, a pipe dream. But I think you're right. I think well on his way to a 2020 season. And watch the strikeouts, but his ownership will go up, and it should. Another guy that I was high on at the beginning of the season, obviously a lot of people were, is Jock Peterson. He hasn't hit leadoff yet, which is, you know, Mattingly. But what do you think about Peterson? Are you intrigued, or do you think think he's in line for a big year?
Same thing as Souza. I think he's going to be a 2020 guy this year, but it's hard to be super productive in runs and RBIs when you're hitting seventh or eighth. So unless he moves up in that lineup, it's going to be hard for him to do a whole lot with those numbers. But You know, he started out well. He plays good defense, and he's been as advertised. But Mattingly, just for some reason, you know, it's almost like the Dusty Baker reincarnation. He doesn't trust rookies, doesn't put them up high early. I mean, Alex Guerrero has, what is he, like second on the team RBIs, and he can't even get at bats.
I mean,
why not? Even if you don't want to keep Guerrero, showcase him and trade him. I mean, I don't understand. I mean, I love Don Mattingly as a player, and he seems like a nice guy, but the decision process is sometimes with how he constructs the lineup is as baffling as Matt Williams in Washington. These guys have all this talent. It seems like they don't know what to do with it or don't trust what to do with it.
Yeah, and I think there's going to have to be at some point some kind of manager's revolution here where they kind of just learn. I mean, eventually you have to listen to logic as opposed to this old school way of, because he's a rookie, he can't hit leadoff. Well, he's your best option. I mean, he walks. He's got a 20% walk rate. And again, it's early, but you know, he showed that in the minor leagues. He had gaudy walk rates in the minor leagues. Last year, you look what he did. 121 games. He went 30-30 with a .303 batting average and an 18% walk rate. Granted, strikeout rate was pretty high, but it wasn't Springer high. So I think you're right on par again. I think 2020 is attainable. And Zips has him at 21 homers, 19 steals with a .242 batting average. So a couple of Steven Souzas, a couple of Jock Petersons, whatever you want to call them. But once he does hit that leadoff spot, I do think that he will stick there. And I do think that will come if he continues to get on base. But who's leading off right now? Is it Jimmy Rollins for the Dodgers?
Yeah, Jimmy Rollins.
Yeah. Give me Jock Peterson, obviously. But okay. So concerno meter, 1 to 10 here. Gregory Polanco, where are you at with him?
What's 1 and 10? One's like majorly concerned,
one is like you're dropping him concerned.
No, I'm not going to drop him yet. Well, am I going to drop Giancarlo Stanton because he didn't hit a home run till today? So, the hardest thing is early in the season is everybody wants justification for where they pick these people. And it's like, man, I believe in Polanco, so I'm going to reach for him in the 13th round, and he's going to lead me to a championship. Well, let him. It takes time. So him and Starling Marte have both gone off a slow start. It's almost like, It seems like now that Pittsburgh enters the year with expectations, doesn't it look like they're almost playing a little bit tight? You know what I mean? Does that make sense? Plus, McCutcheon's been a little banged up, so, you know, it's hard to fly under the radar. Now people are in the locker room, they're asking why you're struggling, and it's like, holy crap. And I think once everybody takes a breath in Pittsburgh and just relaxes a minute, you know, Blanton gets another mile per hour or two back on his fastball, and Polanco and Marte start to hit. I mean, Marte's BABIP this year is .133. His career's above .300. I mean, all this stuff's going to regulate. You know, they're both projected to be about the same numbers. They're like 14 home run, 25 steal guys. Just let it happen. You know, I'm not too concerned with either one of them yet. So I'm willing to ride it out and see what happens.
I mean, you'd obviously rather have Marte for the rest of the year, right?
Yes, I would. I mean, Marte was being picked in the top four rounds in most drafts. So no, he's going to bounce back, and he's streaky too. So once he comes out of whatever he's into, he's going to hit some flare one of these nights, and he's going to go off on a tear. And people are like, "Crap, why did I drop Marte?" So hold tight. If you're upset with him, put him on the bench, get somebody else in there, but please don't cut him yet.
Yeah, you're not dropping your fourth or fifth or sixth round pick or whatever it is. It's 9 games into the season. We need to just take a deep breath and relax a little bit. I'm with you there. I mean, I'm obviously more inclined to, you know, consider Marte bouncing back a little more than Polanco just because he does have more of a track record. But I think you're right. I think the expectations in Pittsburgh are giving some people a little bit of a crazed look at things. Ryan Braun has no extra base hits yet, Greg, and he's already dealing with a little bit of a nagging side ribcage injury. Is this just going to be a thing with Braun now? It's just like, well, he's just always going to be banged up. What do you think?
It's possible. So, you know, his line drive percentage is actually up 3% versus last year. So, I mean, he's still hitting the ball hard. He's just not getting them to the gaps or lift on them. So, and that would speak to the ribs, I would think. So it might take him a month to really hit his stride now because he's a little bit older, so it takes a little more time to recover. So And especially now with Gomez out, he might be trying a little bit harder. So, again, same thing, wait and see. But if we're still getting into a month or two from now and he's still not hitting for power, then it's definitely time to worry, because that means it might just be sapped for the year and it's time to try and peddle him to get something else in return.
Yeah, and I think I can ask this now, because what would you rather have the rest of the year? Would you rather have Marte or Braun?
Rest of the year, Marte.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Yeah, and I mean, I'm concerned with Braun enough that I was willing to, you know, put him in the topic list for this program, but, you know, he probably got a pretty steep discount on him this year, and, you know, I mean, the whole steroid thing, and then now the nagging injury thing. The only thing I really am concerned about is the thumb. If thumb flares up again, I'm out. But if he can deal with the other nagging injuries and stuff, we'll have to just deal with it until he finds himself. And that team is just struggling too. I mean, you look at Jonathan Lucas as well.
Hisashi
Iwakuma is a guy I am actually worried about, and I'm not afraid to say it. End of last season, he was bad. He's been bad for his first two starts this year. What do you think about Iwakuma?
I'm not as worried as you yet, but it definitely raises your concern when he finished the year on a down note and now he's starting it in the same light. But like a couple of the guys earlier in the pod, his line drive percentage is up 4 points to 25.6. His velocities are still pretty much in line with where they were last year on average, so hopefully he just lost a little bit of his confidence and he needs to get a good start. But the more that the teams keep making him, the more there is to worry. I mean, he should have got the win the other day except for the bullpen. So give him a little time. But, yeah, it'd be nice to see his ERA and the other stuff come down.
I agree with you. It's not a great sign when T1 Walker's struggling. He has up season two.
Elias will be up soon. What's that?
At least they don't have any more Rafael Ramirez trouble to worry about.
No.
Got a couple minutes. Greg, do you think the Reds are better than we thought? I think they might be.
Yeah, and Bruce has hit a little, but not as well as he could. Marlon Byrd hasn't hit yet. Frazier is kind of. What's that?
Mesoraco's hurt.
Yeah. So, and their backup catcher Pena, I don't know. So. There's been warts, so we'll see. They've been pretty resilient, though, but they're another team that is searching for somebody to step up in the eighth. I'm surprised they haven't tried J.J. Hoover yet in that role, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him there soon. Jumbo Diaz is blowing two leads bad in the eighth inning, so
oh my God,
I'd like to see Sangrani and Hoover split the eighth as opposed to what they've been doing in the past with it.
Kevin Gregg has been getting meaningful innings for that team.
Good God. Kevin, no. No, just stop.
Completely asinine.
Kevin Gregg could be in the eighth inning if you're down by five runs, not with a lead. That's asinine. That's on the manager. I'm sorry. That's just stupid.
Yeah, Kevin Gregg should be in the eighth inning. In a high A game, as far as I'm concerned.
come on.
All right, so, yeah, I think you're right. Joey Votto's been a monster, and I think they're going to get Homer Bailey back to add him to the Johnny Cueto. Anthony DeSclafani is another guy I've been loving owning. He's been really, really good. So hopefully that continues.
Yep.
And of course, they've got Chapman there in the end. But, once Mesoraco comes back and maybe Marlon Byrd heats up, they might have something to say in that division after all.
They could.
Yeah, so that's pretty much it for us. We're out of time. Sorry again for the technical difficulties. We're gonna have to get this Blog Talk Radio thing figured out. This thing is just no bueno for us. Follow me at tking978. Follow Greg at gju@9, and follow the site at myknuckleballs. We'll be back next Thursday night, 8:00, with more fantasy goodness for you. Thanks for tuning in. Have a good weekend.